Welcome, everybody, to yet another Face Rocker podcast. I'm Freddy.
I'm Matt.
We're still on this.
So yes, we're still on this.
Say your name.
I'm Dez.
I guess I'm Logan. I don't guess I'm Logan. I guess we're still doing this.
Yes,
I'm
we're
Logan.
Still doing it. And we have a guest today, though.
Hello.
We are joined by the one and only film crit Hulk. You may be familiar with his writings on Badass Digest. The New Yorker, yes?
Yeah, I did that once.
Actually,
that
yeah. And they let you do your all caps thing.
Oh, yeah.
In it, which is...
They're fans.
Which has got to be...
Surprisingly.
Yeah, which has got to be some sort of coup in terms of the writing side of things. Yes, Logan.
Really quickly, in all these cases, you go under the pseudonym Film Crit Hulk?
Yes.
So are we going to pitch shift you down for the entirety of this?
Or Logan, how do we know we haven't already pitch shifted him down and what you're listening is in fact already an octave below what it would normally be?
Hulk's actually just screaming nonstop right now.
We've actually left Film Crit Hulk's voice as is and we've pitch shifted up the rest of us.
Oh, that's a good point. That's probably exactly how it is. Anyway, so I guess follow you on Twitter. You are at Film Crit Hulk.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And we all have Twitters too. If you guys are watching this on our websites, rocketjump.com, all of our Twitters down there. Also, we are on iTunes now. Please do us a favor. Even if you're listening to this through the website or whatever means you have, you're downloading the MP3, listening to your on your phone or whatever, please subscribe to it on iTunes and give us a rating on it. It helps us out. It helps us sort of rise through the ranks and lets more people in on this. So.
Are Logan. We becoming a real podcast now?
Slowly
that was like,
but
like a whole, that was a whole intro.
Yeah, that was really needy sounding.
Yeah, that was really needy.
You sound like
should
a
I not? Should we not say anything? He's like, hey, you listen to this if you want.
We just lost our indie cred.
Yeah.
Blew it.
We never
right
had
here.
It. Let's
well,
be
really quick, is there some sort of, because I feel like our listeners, our audience cares about the sort of back end of media production. So I think it's worth actually raising the question.
What
I'm
happens?
Curious.
What happens?
Well, what is there some sort of benefit to doing iTunes as opposed to me just listening to the MP3 on the site?
Well, okay, so from what I can tell, because I'm kind of a newbie to this whole thing, and the problem is a lot of people who are like into the podcast side of it, everyone kind of keeps quiet about exactly how things work. As far as I can tell, the way iTunes goes is it's the one metric that's out there. If you can put your podcast up and you can have an RSS feed and people can download it, but iTunes is kind of like Nielsen. It's like the one number that people can look at and be like, oh, this is a top 10 podcast on iTunes. Therefore, it must be good because it's the only thing out there that's tracking any of this.
So it really matters for people around you. Is it like the equivalent of Walmart who doesn't release their figures? Like people don't release what they've personally had downloaded and they just point at iTunes?
I think like Ricky Gervais had like the Guinness World Record for most podcast downloads. So the numbers will show downloads or something on iTunes. And I guess that stuff goes out. But in general, it's hard to tell. It's hard to see what like the actual numbers are on these things. So, I mean, us being the scrappy young podcast upstart, you know, we got to start from the bottom. We got to start from the grassroots here. Logan, did you bring in some topics? I saw you furiously writing here.
There's one thing I want to talk about, and it's mainly because I don't know what it is.
Fantastic. You're going to have a room of five people have no idea what you're talking about.
I think it's an acronym, but I'm going to try to pronounce it. CISPA.
C-I-S-P-A.
And I think it has something to do with the internet.
It's the new SOPA thing.
So what is SOPA CISPA?
CISPA.
Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act.
It's yet another one of those bills that they keep trying to push through to try and clamp down on the internet. And you yourself have said, and I remember this kind of – I tell people that you say this, so that's, I hope you don't mind.
My dick feels really huge right now.
But I tell people that like I say one of my friends who is quite knowledgeable about these matters claims and believes that for our generation, the one thing that we have to not screw up, it's not global warming, it's not terrorism, it's not all of those, it's not all of the regular things. It's we have the internet, and it's up to us to not make it crappy and screw it up for humanity for the rest of time.
So do you think we're going to have an Arbor Day-esque holiday? Like, you know, like the last generation was trees, conceivably.
Yeah. Like,
That's it. The only advice for the baby boomers was fucking trees.
I don't know if that actually pans out if you look at history.
But will we get like Internet Day, and on Mondays, like all the kindergartners will go out and like plant some fiber,
download free porn, and
like, Billy's first torrent in kindergarten? Like, oh yes,
precisely. But okay, so CISPA is really just another. But that's, so it's so easy.
It is
to. To fucking look at and be like, SOPA, CISPA, it's just a bunch of politicians who don't get that the internet's not pipes, dude. But there must be some sort of legitimate argument for this. I can't imagine that people are stupid or that they're only motivated by a business interest necessarily, at least for something to get this publicly
large.
Are you implying the government has interest in the entire information network of the entire world?
No, I'm implying there must be a pro to CISPA. It cannot be a purely negative thing, which it's so easy for me to knee-jerk for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a couple of things. I think one of the things that they keep bringing up, and some of these engineers who are sort of more familiar with this matter bring up, it's like the problem is you're kind of dealing with the intersection of politics and technology. And the dudes doing politics, that's what they do all day. They sit around and they figure out, okay, let's take this, let's throw this on a bill. Oh, here's what we'll do. We'll throw this and we'll tag it onto the end of this other bill, which will pass. And there's all this sort of political mavericking gamesmanship that happens. And what really bums me out is you see all these people online, like, we got to get behind, we got to stop SOPA. And there's this huge, you know, remember it was like Wikipedia blacked out, and everyone's like, we got to stop this, call your senators and stuff. And it worked that time. And then the CISPA now has, I think, passed through the House of Representatives.
It's because of Wikipedia didn't black out. Like that, right. That to me is like the fucking like proto-key, like the thing that they turn the crank and everybody loses their shit.
And what everyone forgets is like they can do this over and over again. Let's say it works again. Guess what? They'll wait, they'll redraft it, they'll rename it, they'll do another acronym that is similar, like CISPA, SOPA, like it all rhyme. It's horrible.
It all sounds like snake slithers.
Just dirty oil.
Well, Obama still has veto power over all of that.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess here's the point.
What about Obama?
And to be fair, he threatened to veto it.
Yeah, and I guess the point is, it all kind of comes down to maybe we should stop worrying about trying to constantly rally support against the politics side of it. Maybe we should look at the fundamentals of DNS and TCP/IP and like update it so that you literally can't regulate against it. Maybe that's the solution.
Do you want to not regulate against it?
Hell yeah. I want everything to be free.
So you're arguing for like making sure the internet maintains its wild westness.
I think our guest Hulk wants to speak here.
Well,
you have to use your hand.
Seriously, dude. To be fair,
we'll never look at you because we're the most unprofessional podcast. Yeah, here's our guest. Anyways, guys, what do you want to talk about today?
here's a preview, really, of what the old podcast was. Right. So this is what the old podcast was. So anyway, I was thinking about.
Hey, guys, we got to guess.
And then Logan came up with a brilliant idea. Probably learn from his third grade teacher, raise your hand, and then we'll slowly try and clean up the audio airwaves. So I guess you have to raise your hand. Sorry, dude.
No, not at all. Like I was going to say is, you know, interestingly enough that enough of my background is I come from working in film and television mm-hmm. from like the very, very corporate side of things for the last decade is that they're just freaking out because they're not making money anymore.
Yeah.
Don't know how to make money off the internet, and they don't know how to do it. And they recognize that it is the future. That's where everything is going. So it's literally just a practical decision of those who are in power are trying to find and claw at some sort of kind of legality where they can find a way to keep the system and keep the power that they have in place.
And they do have is lobbyists, and they do have a very powerful political sway. So they can push these things across.
Right. The idea is they really are fighting for their lives as they understand it and have it, you know, which is not – I'm not meaning to turn this into some giant like, you know, morality of
this
man versus corporation.
Everywhere. Last week we were talking about hamburgers eating itself as a coat of arms. Now we can go here too.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I saw one submission of the hamburgers. To be fair, they didn't appear to be eating themselves. And it was in fucking color. And guys, a fucking stamp needs to be black and white. So if it's not black and white.
So the gentleman who submitted his entry, thank you very much. I thought you did a fine job. We would love to see more. If anyone else out there has any interesting ideas.
Well, you know, what you bring up is kind of interesting, Hulk, what you bring up. Because I think like our generation, our time period is seeing a lot of this weird transitional. People are going to lose their jobs. Like the whole thing, like politicians go around like the auto industry, right, in the U.S. Right. So, like, you know, we got to go to Detroit. There's a lot of votes in Ohio and stuff. But the fact is, it's like, yeah, but it's kind of – we've lost a lot of those jobs, and that's just because the world is opening up, and India is going to make cars, and China is going to start making cars, and there's going
to
be people –
To be fair, it's beyond just other countries getting our jobs. We get robots now, robots who can do a wonderful job at –
You don't have to pay them.
Well, you have to pay for the robot, but they just released a robot.
That pays for itself.
Well, it's $20,000 for a robot that follows your every commands and is just as good at restocking shelves as any human can be.
So it's a restocker robot.
So really what it comes down to is jobs are being
The best restocker, really?
Jobs that are not creative thinking jobs are being removed and not being replaced or located in a different place. They're just gone. And we have to just be okay with that. We just have to be like, it's cool, dude. You don't have anything you need to do anymore. So let me give you checkers and some crosswords and fucking just have fun, dude. And here's some bread.
Yes, like, checkers and crosswords and bread. Logan's
entire summary of the entire class of people.
I would classify unemployment a little bit differently.
Was that your idea for Medicare? Is just checkers,
give up
crosswords and bread. That will keep the elderly
every week.
But this is sort of a weird time because you can see a theoretical future like 200 years from now where it's like, yeah, remember when we didn't have, remember when people had to do these jobs, these manual labor jobs? I mean, I guess it's the inexorable march of technology. It's happened since, you know, cotton gin.
With the exception of refinements in farming, because it's still our biggest industry, mm-hmm. we're pretty much there now. We're a technocracy. Mm-hmm. There's no doubting about it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. So what does that? Where does that leave us at the end of the day?
Us?
A bunch of schmucks who are trying to make movies. Pretty much.
Oh, you mean where does it leave you? Not us as humanity. Yeah. Where does it leave us room?
I would say this is one of the interesting things is we're talking about the shift of jobs and where they're going, and because of, you know, like I say, as I've been in this very rigid sort of corporate world with the big studio systems and all that sort of stuff, is that, you know, we're entering this democratic age of filmmaking and all these other things, and this is what the internet has opened up. But the problem is what we're kind of losing is the amount of really high quality jobs that are propagated through the system of, you know, having big studio budgets and all these kinds of things.
And apprenticeships and like a real system to actually create high level craftsmen. Is that what you're talking
about?
Well,
it's just like every studio keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller mm-hmm. as, you know, we keep, like I say, the way we're going democratic with how filmmaking is coming about. But the one advantage that I would say is why I'm less worried about film and why it will never quite go the way of newspapers or the music industry is because making movies is so damn expensive. Making TV shows is so damn expensive. And so there's a capacity to which it will there will always be the way the system will crowd around things that can support making that much money and having budgets that big and the way they all kind of work. So there's a way I'm not as worried.
Do you think films will always be that expensive?
They're going down in price now as we speak. Budgets are getting lower and lower and lower, which is strange.
I guess it's a relative thing, isn't it? It's like it's relative. Right. How much does it cost to record
it? Well, as compared to a podcast or a newspaper.
Right.
But I think did we have this discussion on your podcast?
Yeah, at what point does the actual content of generating a film become negligible? And really it's just pure creativity, which will come eventually. It's just a question of is it 50 years, 100 years, or 200 years?
Well, that's the thing with like almost any job at a point. It's like any job has some sort of level of creativity. Even when you get to like farming or something like that, there's a job at some level that involves management and creativity in a way that a robot can't.
Well, it's interesting. The idea – have you guys ever heard of CQ, creativity quotient?
Yes.
No.
So there's IQ, intelligence quotient. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that one's a little nebulous and it's not a good indicator of future success. Alternatively, I only found out about this recently. There's CQ, creativity quotient, which is how creative you are. And in fact, this one's incredibly objective and is a like directly tells you how successful will be later in life. So I do not know why we're not just having.
Is there an online test that I could go and maybe take?
Unfortunately not, and I don't know. It seems like it's for a very young age. I don't think you can be like a 20-year-old and take a CQ test. Yeah. But like when you're kindergartner, you take the CQ test. It's like
true or false. You can take
actually CQ tests. You can also take EQ tests for emotional quotient and your ability to handle things.
Whoa.
And IQ, I wouldn't. Success is sort of a weird word to put with it because I would argue that the thing about IQ is it's really just a measuring of like how fast your processor is. That's the way to think about IQ.
How many megahertz you got upstairs, bro?
So exactly. Can you give me a computer analogy for CQ?
No.
How much spyware you got in your system?
how many games you have in your Steam?
And what about EQ?
I would say the physical engineering of the actual product, as far as like how creatively can you make it.
You're saying EQ is how you can handle things emotionally? That's got to be like your heat sink and how good it is, bro.
That's
oh god,
your memory.
That's pretty good.
Can you tell me a little bit about EQ, because I've never heard of this before.
Oh, EQ is fascinating. I love it. Is it basically traps your ability to emotionally handle situations, whether it's high trauma or like ongoing friendship or like literally it's this whole thing, and it's the same way it tracks you. Like, have you ever taken that test where, like, are you an NT? Are you a
psychology?
It's called a Myers-Briggs, right?
Yes.
Introverted versus extroverted.
Right.
This is Jeopardy, Logan.
Really quickly, very interesting. Myers-Briggs was developed by Holocaust survivors to show how wonderful everyone is. Straight up. Like, that's... and if you read the descriptions, no matter what your combination, that's like how like every unique snowflake is. Like it's just like, you're introverted. That's okay, because we need those people to focus. So anyway, sorry. Go ahead, continue, please. This is very interesting to me.
The whole thing about emotional quotient is it's designed to measure your aptitude for human relations. Like that's the kind of thing. So it's like, you know, in IQ. Like I say, it's the processor. The EQ is what they do to combine as like, oh, do you have good people skills? Do you have all these other kinds of things? Can you handle when things get bad? Are you the kind of person who always blames things on other people?
Start using that in dating like sites and stuff? Like,
sure.
Is it like you're in a desert and a tortoise is coming?
That's exactly what I was thinking, bro. I was like, is this some fucking Blade Runner shit?
Blade Runner shit, dude. It's like some replicant shit, bro.
Yeah, it's actually a fascinating test because I've seen one version of it where it's all basically they introduce hypotheticals and they say, would you do this? Mm-hmm. Would you do that? If like so-and-so is being an asshole, what would you do? Yeah. Like that kind of thing. And then what they do is this really brilliant thing that I love is afterwards you take the same test again and you have to measure how honest you were about those answers. Yeah,
yourself.
This is a really interesting. Like, they're like, okay, you take the test now. Be really honest. Like, how far is that away from the behavior you honestly most commonly use?
It's interesting that they would.
And then it becomes this modifier.
It's like a distancing sort of thing because you're out of the moment. Then you kind of can maybe more objectively take a look at what you're said.
How much has this test been assessed? Like, has it been validated and been like, this is a great test for EQ?
I mean, it's been validated to the point that just like the people who are interested in keep focusing on it. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where we are in the psychological world today. Is that, you know, it's like. It's like fractal. It's just gone out in a million directions, and people are just focusing on their one little thing on this little tiny corner of psychology. And it's we're actually getting worse at sort of total whole psychology, if that makes sense.
Logan, I want you to take this test. I want to be like, all right, dude, you are driving along, and a person rear ends you in their car. You pull over, and they start screaming at you. What do you do?
Well, so here's the thing.
Answer the question, Logan.
I would be so chill with it. But here's the thing.
There's a video of a guy, by the way, who's sitting in his truck, and it's his wife is filming on a cell phone, and he's sitting there just staring straight ahead, and the dude outside is just, like, pounding on the window, screaming at
him. Dude, I was in fucking Burbank today, and a guy stole another guy's parking spot, and the guy actually got out, screamed, and kicked a dent in the dude's truck. And the dude in the truck was just kind of, like, this stunned middle-aged Latino guy just being like, what is happening right now? And the dude who actually, like, railed on the car, his license plate was New Yorker with a C instead
of K. That's great.
All right.
Wrap that up in a bow.
It seems the one thing that's lacking here is the internal versus external reaction. I talked about my last doctor visit where they thought I was on the list of drugs and methamphetamines because my heart rate was over 90, and they were looking at me like, "Well, you seem totally chill."
Were
like,
you just really were you really scared of like the what were you scared of? The
just
prostate
fucking,
exam?
Just doctors, dude. Doctors
you're scared.
Freak me out.
You're freaked out by doctors?
You might have just had an erection.
I get the same thing. I have an anxiety attack just being in a doctor's office. I have this innate fear that. Every next visit I have will be the one where they deliver the news. Because I'm fully aware that every man dies, and I'm now I'm about 30 years old. I am 30 years old. I'll tell you exactly how old I am. And I think maybe because I know my grandfather died when he was 25, so I just feel like, man, today is the day.
Am I the only one in this room without a weird fear of...
I have zero fear of...
Yeah, it's just the doc. They're just sitting there.
I go to the doctor, they take my pulse and my blood pressure, and every time they ask me, the nurse, before the doctor even comes in, the nurse will take my vitals and look at me and ask, what's the matter? Like, what are you on? I just have an anxiety attack walking into a doctor's office.
It's straight. It's like American Idol, but instead for your singing voice, for your like biological abilities. Like it's just like, how good of a human are you right now? Like it's just, and how could that not give you anxiety? But anyways, what I'm saying is that you.
I was about to go off on a huge tangent about health stuff.
So I don't
tangents are the name of the game. Are you going to finish up the other thoughts on the
no,
the
probably
early
not. Okay.
You interrupted. Now you got to go.
Okay.
You got to
take
it.
Yeah, I got this. No, I was going to say part of the reason why I don't is because you're talking about, you know, getting the bad news and that kind of thing.
Right.
Is you know, not to get into giant personal stories here, but like I've gone through that part of getting the bad news.
Okay.
And I've gotten through it enough times that it's like, you kind of just, like, get used to it. And not only that, like, when you get through that and it's like, oh, doctors have saved your life. Like, I am all about, like, it's all good. Whatever you guys want to do, I'm on your side. Let's figure this out. That kind
of
thing.
You know, part of it might be because my dad's a doctor. He's an anesthesiologist. And so okay, I guess growing up in it might be different because I guess one of the things is, like, I never realized this, but people, like, will go to the doctor when they're feeling sick. That's an insane concept to me because part of it is because my dad was there. He'd be like, you're fine. Like, it was always just like, your body's the message I got was one, your body's incredibly resilient, incredibly good at taking care of itself. Like, don't waste your time going to the doctor. You're fine. And I just sleep it off, you know, like that type of thing. I mean, he would still say, like, unlike the Logan method of getting over a cold, which is I remember I had food poisoning once, Logan. And he came in and I was sitting there throwing up and Logan's like, bro, I just got to sweat it out. I'm like, really? Just sweat out food poisoning, Logan. Really? Logan's nodding.
Sweat it out.
I think I just believe in the placebo effect so much that I just constantly tell myself I'm good, and as long as I don't ever have that bad news, my body will just be good.
I was going to say, my whole method is like the second I start feeling sick, I like be sure that next 12 hours I just get lots of rest. I go
That's
late
exactly
to whatever
what
I have to do. Yeah. And I just be sure right at that moment I start feeling it, I don't push it.
Yeah.
And that usually saves me on the back end.
Yeah. And one of the things, I guess it's one of those things where a lot of technology now has the ability. There's a lot of ethical issues with like genetic sequencing, right? So one of the things that people are wondering about now, they're debating because they're not quite there yet. But like, okay, let's say everybody has gene sequences, and now you go to the doctor, and the doctor in his chart has your information, your allergies, and your genetic sequence. They might see things like you have Huntington's. You will suffer through Huntington's in your 40s. But the question is, should they say anything? Do you want to know?
But, like, so what's interesting thing, about right? this is, so you went straight to genomes, but I thought you were going to go into one different direction, and then there's one sort of tangent from it. So A, there's knowing that you're sick based on the data footprint you'd create. I don't know if you saw, they were able to figure out if people were going to get sick like 9 days before they started displaying physical symptoms.
Based on what?
Based on their Twitter.
What?
Straight up.
What?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
No.
By looking at somebody's Twitter, they could figure out with relative accuracy if they were about to get sick.
I'm going to cast suspicion on this immediately.
What sort of sick?
It's like, man.
Straight up the flu. Like during flu season, they could identify who was getting the flu before they ever started exhibiting symptoms.
Something like that.
I want to call bullshit.
Give me your computer. I'll fucking look it up while we talk about something else.
I'm fascinated. Don't
well, it's kind of like, do you ever hear about Target's ad system, targeted ad system, figuring out people were pregnant?
Target. Yeah.
Well,
we're
figuring out girls were pregnant before they knew, based on their behavior.
No, I mean, there's some stuff that makes sense. There's subconscious changes in, you know, various.
I think Freddie was the first person to talk to me about the idea of machine learning, and there was
really that's like I'm pretty. Pumped that I was the first.
Yeah. Well, specifically, there was that one robot where it's like machine learned how to tell the temperature, and it ended up going with this incredibly circuitous route.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, Fred.
FPGAs, field programmable gate arrays.
I think I'm so confused because I only use Twitter to talk as a Marvel character about movies.
Do you think they could tell if you were getting sick?
Like, I don't know.
Excuse me, Hulk, you might have the flu right now. You might need to.
But it could be that there's certain emotions that come out like while you're. you know, getting pregnant, and then different. I mean, the fact is, people don't.
Or could just be like,
free will, but you are affected by your chemistry.
They're just looking
constantly
for tweets. Like, boy, a lot of people coughing on this airplane. Gee, yeah. Stop.
They're just predicting. Yeah. Like, all my friends have the flu. Hey, yeah, exactly. I feel good.
Man, something's going around. It's like that. Yeah.
Pretty I've lost good indicator. 30 pounds and I can't sleep.
I wonder what's happening.
Could be two different things. So they had this basically, yeah, it's machine learning. So they did an experiment basically where they're, it's complex. Even Wikipedia, in fact, we'll put the link up for FPGA, Field Programmable Gate Arrays. But they developed a machine to basically, what's the temperature? Figure out what the temperature is. And if it's above a certain degree, it's put on the green light. If it's below a certain threshold, put on the red light. And they did these things where they just kept, I think it was temperature something. But they kept experimenting with it, and it was basically learning it, you know, evolutionary algorithms, you know, run through iterations. It would change the coding of itself. And they found that the way it was figuring these things out, oh, I'm sorry, it was to detect a low tone and a high tone was what it was. But they were using completely, what it ended up doing was really bizarre. Like, they would do things like they would take the machine and put it in slightly colder, and all of a sudden it didn't work anymore. An environment that was slightly cold or slightly warmer, which wasn't working because it was doing weird things like the detecting like specific changes between the chips and stuff. It's pretty nuts, but that's a good
breed. I had this debate with both my two best friends are both doctors in different fields now or becoming doctors. But we had this really long debate and they were on completely different sides of it. And actually, my brother started it, who's like a data guy. But going along with if Logan's talking about this, his essential argument was that doctors are more, not irrelevant, but over time, like, a computer could do what a doctor does.
Absolutely.
Better than a doctor. And I was like, one guy who's, they're both becoming doctors, so yeah. I think one was very kind of sensitive to that. The other guy's like, yeah, dude, like, a computer would be way better at diagnosing than any human.
Well, on a sheer diagnostic level.
Because the idea being there's no such, instinct is you going back to your data set, like what you've learned.
And subconsciously
we're calling it. So
well, they talk about traders who like look at commodities trade and they look at the screen and they're just like, the market's going to go up. How do they know that? It's not because they have some
instinct. It's not gut feeling.
They have thousands of data points throughout their life that they're drawing.
There's a reason
upon.
Why your gut instinct is almost always about something you do continuously. Even if it's relationships, the gut instinct is because you're picking up on all these subconscious signals.
I think if you're interested in this, you should read the mediocre to okay book, Blink.
Blink's about that to a degree. But
like how you said that because that is his mediocre book.
Yeah. Click on the link to buy it from Amazon.
Affiliate.
He said everything within the first 60 pages.
Most of those books are. Like, I remember the long tail book.
I like the rest of it, but
the long tail book was really irritating because a lot of them are like, if any book was ever a Wired article, expect that to just basically be the Wired article and then another 160 pages of padding so it can get on the New York Times bestseller list.
Okay. So we have.
Are you reading this Twitter?
Research and we got it. It doesn't have to do with what you're saying. It is your GPS location from tagging your tweets. And it was taken across New York City. So this is very so it's about where you are.
But to be fair, they had to figure out who was sick so they could figure out what's propagating, right? So it was they were looking for natural language things that were I'm sick but not I'm sick of this line but like I'm sick.
Right.
And then figuring out who was in proximity to another.
So in that way, it makes very sense
Do you think you'll be able to geo like track and predict then like trends, like for like advertising and stuff, like this band, like that guy, that popular guy in that apartment's listening to
the Daft Punk album. We're already doing it.
Yeah, we're entering the world of so much data, and it's just a matter of crunching through it. I love, by the way, the weird ones. Twitter sometimes they would get. They would get like people tweeting about earthquakes, and people would read the earthquake tweet and be like, "Oh gosh, an earthquake!" And then they would get hit by the earthquake because the earthquake was propagating through during that time period, so the tweet was actually traveling faster.
That's
like people
crazy.
Were hearing about earthquakes before they were hitting them, which is kind of cool.
How do we get off on this shit?
Oh no,
Logan, we never know how we get off on any of this.
The internet's pretty cool, though, guys.
It's cool internet.
Yes, it is.
So just machine learning is really interesting to me. Have you guys heard about Angelina?
Is that the one who plays Mario Brothers?
No. This is the robot that has learned how to make new video games.
Okay. Oh, you told me about this.
It's incredible. So it began with they created a simple platformer and then using machine learning. It's this PhD at the – you know how we got off on this because of creative computing creative quotient and then IQ. Who knows? Anyways, robots will take over everything and even our creative functions because of this. So this – this robot started out with, and this isn't robot as in motors, but robot as in like a chatbot, completely artificial intelligence, they created a simple platformer, and then it learned how to create levels.
Wouldn't it be better if it was a robot, though, that was sitting around and be like, I need coffee?
Well, that's like, I feel like an AI, even if it's an AI that's just pure speaker, they should put it in a separate computer tower and give it a beret and like start so, Logan, treating it like a robot.
When you say that robots will take over the creative functions, but, where do you think those creative functions come from? Because ultimately, if you want to break down our brain into computers, ultimately, like, art or something comes from experiences, correct?
I believe Film Crit Hulk has something to say.
Okay, so you're talking about breaking it down into levels. So is this specifically level design we're talking about?
So here's
because
the thing.
Because if it is, that I can understand.
So it's interesting. There's a whole school. It's in Nottingham, England. If one person ends up going there because of this podcast, like A+, right?
Why? Why A+?
Just because we got to become a PhD student. But anyways.
That's what we need. More PhD
students.
Something
tells me they have enough aptitude if they're going to be going to school in England.
Somebody tells me that podcast with a bunch of fuckers is not going to sway the
needle
either way.
This guy's just playing games and smoking pot, and he just heard you vaguely reference school, like,
that's
like,
what I'm gonna do.
He might do it after this story. Right. So.
Just give it a chance, guys. Give it a chance.
So it's the School for Creative Computing, and their whole thing is artificial intelligence that's creative. And they will be the first ones to be like, yeah, we're not there yet. We're not going to be there for quite a few decades.
But they would tell you if they were.
But so it started off with level design. But when it got interesting was when they stopped making levels. And started, it's such an amazing technique. They started generating levels that were impossible to beat and then told the computer to come up with mechanics to beat those levels, to invent new platforming mechanics. So, he admits that in all these cases, there is a strong human presence to help guide this thing. Specifically, when you look at creativity quotient or creativity in general, it's a two-step process. There is the ideation process or the blue sky process, at which point you're just trying to come up with associations, great, like in just trying to generate content. And then there's a whittling down process where you're trying to figure out what is good from the ideas you've generated. And computers are very good at step one, but not step two.
If I had to make an analogy to how this would apply to filmmaking and what I think it means as far as video game creation goes, is to me what's being described is no different than, say, the autofocus technique on a modern camera. Because what it is it's basically streamlining a very technical process of coming up with how certain things work and the mechanics and all that sort of stuff. But at the same token, you know, what's driving people to this is sort of the cohesion of narrative, the cohesion of story, things like that. And so this is very interesting because I'm very curious to see about once they start trying it with the concept of storytelling, like how
it has been done. And if this came up in our podcast a few weeks ago, so it's about the future, so fuck it. We're always going to come up with it first. But Rob Auden was talking about narrative intelligence. If you just Google narrative intelligence, it's the field of storytelling through artificial intelligence.
Okay, but this is like the subject most near and dear to my heart is the functionality of narrative is inherently built on flaw. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the thing. It's like because what I will say is the narrative intelligence is the same think that gets us CSI knockoffs.
How so? Please elaborate.
Okay, and this is
good. Like the headiest podcast we've ever done. It's good.
Sorry. Okay,
keep going.
So basically, is narrative functions in a very human way. You read a terrible book like fucking Save the Cat. Can we swear?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So you read a terrible fucking book like Save the Cat, right? which if you are a screenwriting student out there,
you probably read it,
and I'm sorry. And it's
I will say, by the way, just not to interrupt, but your article on Screenwriting 101 is probably I know it's Matt's favorite. The two articles I love that you've done are the screenwriting one and the How to Evaluate Actors one.
Not to interrupt, Freddie, but that was an interruption.
Yeah, that was an interruption.
to say, well, if you like that, I rewrote Screenwriting 101 in a much more coherent fashion because I barely edited that column more than just getting it all out there. I rewrote it as a book that's going to be coming out very, very soon.
Oh, all
yes.
Right.
Is that an announcement I smelled?
A plug? It's a plug. I kind of announced it before, but it's like four times as long, and I'm like is the most proud of anything.
Would
I've
you
ever
say
done.
This is like a Wired article where if we just read the article, we'd be good?
Is it, listen, look me straight in the eye and tell me it's not another 120 pages of fluff.
If you type in Space Rocker, you get a 20% discount,
I
believe.
It is honestly a much better expression. I came up with a better through line that goes through it. And just everything. Like, it is a superior thing
so,
in every kind
of way. Speaking
of
through lines, I want to go back to this discussion we were talking about.
I just want to know, is it available on Kindle? Will it be on Kindle?
Yeah, it's going to be on everything.
Okay, because
I
fucking don't even do hard copy anymore.
Yeah. That's like, it's just
fucking
like,
future!
Yeah, I
fuck that.
I'm not sure. I think we're going to have like some like decorative...
Special features on Kindle?
No, hard copies are going to
You're
going to
do a
like,
hard cover? What are you going to do for the
I have
cover
no
art, dude?
I got a guy.
Is it a hamburger?
It's just going to be a guy? That's
no.
That's kind of. This, I don't know if that quite fits screen.
This guy,
the naked
probably,
guy.
I'm probably saying his name wrong, but his name's Yannick Belzil.
I believe that's the real name of Mobius. This is incredible, you guys.
But no, he draws like most of my like Hulk art that I've used a bunch of, and
awesome.
He's awesome. And so like, I'm like, hey, yay. He's going to
That's really
thing.
Cool. Well, until that comes out, you can check your article out on
right.
Badass Digest and just Google it. Come on, guys.
So anyways, is getting back to the subject of narrative and what we were talking about is narrative intelligence, is you can compile the idea of, right, beats you should hit, like something like Save the Cat outlines a very, very specific thing. All you're doing is you are making things the exact same and in the... most rote ways possible, you are combining them to the same exact kinds of mechanics. Now, the reason why this is important is, like, I have this whole thing that we have to fucking just stop it with the hero journey. And it has nothing to do with the functionality of that. It's the fact that we are making all these hero narratives into the same exact thing. Like you can watch a movie like Aragorn and, like, know, like, this moment from Star Wars, this moment from Star Wars, this moment from Star Wars. And people get into this trap of falling into that thing. And the ironic thing that I'm going to say is it's the flaws of narrative that give things a human element. It's the way that Quentin Tarantino breaks all these rules while fully understanding how all those rules work.
Yeah, that's the big
that
one, right?
Puts them, yeah.
I think you've compared films to people before, and that's something I've always actually really liked, and I think when you think of it that way, because I believe narrative and real art should feel organic and should feel human, and just like there's no perfect, if you truly love somebody or you know somebody, like a lot of things you'll know about your friends are their flaws and imperfections, and I think if a robot were to develop a person or things like that, it's true, you're getting into an aggregate, at a certain point you're almost, everything's going to be rising to a point, like right when stuff's created, and they actually had a robot who did the same thing with music. I think that's one of the first like intelligence. It was analyzing classical music and being like, you can just create classical music. And what happened was it created something that sounded like classical music, but it was ugly. And
actually,
it never could go beyond that.
I love that.
It actually became indistinguishable from a Bach fugue. It could create fugues that literally nobody could tell which was Bach and which was a computer. So it had perfectly emulated Bach.
Bach but specifically, who was part machine as the writings of the Baroque period.
But so here's the thing. What you've described, which is a flaw, basically introducing flaws and then assessing whether those flaws made it better, I'd argue, is the very high-level flow chart of that. No? Yes?
Right, but it's something that also, as human experience, works on a very instinctual level.
Well, that's here's what I was saying, experience. A robot will live somewhere, or it will just grab experiences from a person who gives it. Like, where is it grabbing those experiences? Unless it's...
Urban
not
Dictionary.
Not romantic, dictionary. Unless it's falling in love or tripping into a river and having a near-death experience, that robot will not be able to
I remember
create.
Once. Exactly. You almost formatted
and
me.
It sounds flowery, but it's true. It won't. Ever.
But here's the thing. I mean, that's large. It goes to if you've ever seen horse e-books.
Horse e-books.
Right? That's a Markov chain. And all a Markov chain is, it's the most primitive form of computational creativity. In fact, it's not computational creativity. It's more – it's
the equivalent of putting your hand in a bunch of jelly beans and picking the
yes,
ones
but
that
all it is doing, to give you guys a Markov chain is the likelihood – so let's do a little math lesson just so you guys know what a Markov chain is.
Yay.
A Markov chain is the likelihood of
and
where something will go if you are at position X.
Listener.
The likelihood of where it will go next is based purely on your current position. And so what that means is for a Markov chain, most of your spam emails, if you ever receive a spam email, is a Markov chain. And so what that is it's grabbing a group of a body of text, whatever that – in the case of horse e-books, it's a bunch of books about horses conceivably. for every word, it searches through its domain and finds that word plus the next word. And it grabs that and then does it for the next word. So each word is conceivably associated with the word right before it. And so you get these and you get these things that sound kind of like humans. and that's such a primitive implementation of this. But really what it comes down to, Matt, is what is it pulling from? And so if it's just pulling from one person, that's one thing. But if it's pulling from the wealth of all human experience, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, as we leave a bigger data footprint.
The only two things that really sum up human experience.
But ultimately it comes down to if we have that giant library to pull from, it's really disconcerting, I think, to us as creative humans that, wait, you're telling me a computer could just do this algorithmically?
No, because that's what I was getting at, though, is that when you're grabbing all those experiences and you're doing that, the Markov chain or whatever it is, you're building to a point. What's going to do is going to create an aggregate vanilla flavor is what you end up getting. It's how is it the way you're talking about it, like as far as flaws.
So what you're saying, it would be fantastic in Hollywood.
It'd be going to the heroes and then it's the turn away from what you expect. Whereas,
but here's the thing,
as you go aggregate, things get, they've shown it, like as you, right, the bigger the average, you start getting to a center point of
stuff. But we have to separate the two creative steps, the step of building out versus the step of whittling down. And so computer is actually very good at building out, right? It's kind of like, do you ever read there's a short story about a library where every book of every like sequence of a billion letters is present. A computer can
sounds
do
like
that.
A Doctor Who episode.
It does.
Yeah. Only it was made in the 1930s and it's called The Library of Babylon.
Oh,
no,
that's right. Yeah,
no,
that
wait, the library,
sounds
no, it's,
a lot like a Doctor Who. What's that one?
It sounds
like
a library.
Library of Babylon by, let's go with Oscar de la Hoya.
So explain the story.
It's the Library of Babel, I believe. It's not.
I almost went library on a boxing tangent.
it's
Borges.
There we go. Jorge Luis Borges.
Borges.
Yes.
Bad guy of Assassin's Creed 2.
Yep.
Yeah. Everybody just
seriously?
Read that story
really?
And then we can save it.
I'm really glad I missed those crap games.
Hey.
The third one's pretty cool. It takes place in Boston.
They have contributed to my understanding of how I have video games are bad and flawed in certain ways, better than any other set of games, and the things that work about them.
They're really
I'm
good.
I'm working on a big thing.
I'm really.
You're gonna talk about Assassin's Creed?
I'm slowly working on it now. I don't know what it's gonna be, but it's
I'm
gonna
really,
be about all
yeah.
video games.
I spend more time like reading the little history blurbs from those games than anything else. I'm like everything else bores me.
Because they're awesome.
They're written pretty well. I just want those. Yeah.
They're funny too.
Yeah, it's like Wikipedia except on my Xbox.
So what were we talking about?
We're talking about narrative intelligence. So yes. So they can do the flaws. It's just an assessment of. But I think the real challenge for computers is figuring out whether what they've achieved is good or not.
Right.
Because they can achieve
they
a lot
good
of
good taste.
Arguably, that's the problem with most screenwriters, actually.
This gets into it. This reminded me of something that I think fits very, very aptly. I'm going to have to be very general here. I'm working with a dude now, his friend, and like we're on the exact same page. As far as everything that we think is the right choice for this specific project. Mm-hmm. And yet when we talk about everything that doesn't have to do with that project, we have very differing taste. Mm. And it pumped me to make this comment on Twitter.
Do you believe
the other,
you found your soulmate?
No. But, but I was going to say it prompted me to have the sort of realization I talked about on Twitter is – filmmakers don't have to have great taste in all movies. They have to have the best taste in their own movies. Eh. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does. Well, here's so I was gonna actually.
Matt, you answered that too soon. As a more learned man, I will think about this and process it and answer maybe tomorrow or the day after.
I was gonna ask a question to the. I think the other problem with do you feel that inherently the fact that something comes. Actually, I think you're talking about this in your podcast before. Inherently comes from a human. As in this context, I feel thinking that art is not contextualized is incorrect. So, for example, a lot of people look at this Toy Story film that came out. This family redid Toy Story, the first Toy Story with like dolls and stuff. It's adorable. And
is
it shows
like
that,
a bonding activity?
No, and it shows,
we're just talking about Toy Story 1?
Toy Story 1. They did it all with dolls, and it was just the kids, and it was filmed on DV camera and whatever.
Oh, wait. So this, you're not talking about the Toy Story. You're talking about something somebody made based on Toy Story.
They did
frame for frame,
recreated Toy Story with their kids and toys.
Understood.
Those kids are going to grow up really
everybody,
well balanced.
And I agree with the general concept, which is this showed that Toy Story works incredibly well just on a story level because it's still entertaining to watch. However, the context that it was created by a family, I think, is where a vast majority of that magic and the fact that that short was enjoyable came from. And if that exact thing was released, say, in theaters or by a studio, being like, hey, we did a remake of Toy Story with a bunch of fucking kids, you'd be like, this is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen. The color correction looks like ass. Everything about this sucks dick. This is awful.
Money grab.
So if a rope, it's almost like, yes, you're right. They may have created a song that sounds just like a classical musician, but is the sole fact the moment you introduce them, which of course you'd always lie, or seen it played live or something, that changes the art inherently, correct?
I think that really speaks to how humans feel about themselves, quite honestly.
I think it speaks to how humans feel about other humans.
Empathy.
Because that's the thing. Because I'm not going to go see the concert of the computer that came up with these neat-sounding songs.
I'd argue there actually is a lot of people who would go see it.
There probably are.
But the
context, to be fair, the
context would be, wow, this computer is really, it's very neat. It's very left brain. Yes, it's not like, let me, I want to know how this computer felt. Like, it's very much like,
how quaint. A machine to aspire to the greatest reaches of man.
Pass me the wine and cheese platter. Yes. This is how I imagine this event going. Or it's a bunch of hipsters singing.
Well, it's just a bunch of
Pitchfork reviewers be like, this sucked.
People really don't like
this computer. This computer was better last
year.
This
computer's too mainstream. This processor's too new.
I saw this computer in a basement and odd eight.
But I think what we're getting to is we're going to create a world of these robot artists that then feel unloved because they're not understood by any humans.
Do we have a movie idea? Do we have a movie idea?
I create this art, but nobody will watch it.
Here we go. Come with me.
This is a short.
Come with me on this journey. The first robo artist created to love and paint. It would be Amadeus with
his robot who creates perfect music, and then this guy creates music very similar to his, and everybody weeps at his like concertos and stuff, and this robot everybody just sits there and just listens and goes like, all right, cool robot, you did a good job, I guess. And walks away.
I think ultimately
I would argue the point of Amadeus was that he was actually better.
No, of course he definitely was.
I just wanted to be sure.
I think what it's going to come down to is people, the moment they come up with this computer that can do something better than human can creatively, people are just going to lie about it. They're just going to straight up lie who came up with this because they won't want to admit that a computer. Basically,
but
the moment Osimo, the robot, is invented, we will all lie.
It's like, what's next? Making love with our human women? Is that where this is going?
Like, I mean, I don't know.
You're gonna woo us with our music and then make love to our human women?
I would throw it back at you, Logan. I would actually say that it's more likely, not to call the people who work on this stuff uncreative, but I think those who think the narratives that these robots are creating are good are unqualified, or when they do create something that they think is good, they will lie and be like, this concerto.
I can tell you.
Or they helped run it behind the scenes. They'll say, this story is as good.
Anybody is sincerely interested in this, go to, and if you're of college going age or about to become, go to UC Santa Cruz. They've just started up a PhD program. It features Michael Mateus, the guy who created Facade. Facade is interesting, but what Michael Mateus, the creator of Facade, and anybody who's associated with this area will admit is, it is by no means there. No, they are never going to say, outside of white papers, that they've achieved anything.
But the clarification is sometimes when the response of we're nowhere there, sometimes is trying to imply that eventually we'll get there, and there may not be. The argument is that we may never get there. We may not be there because we're not going to be there.
This goes down all the way down to the level of like, okay, can we simulate the human brain?
Yes, but
so, let's say you can't.
I'd argue it is well before that. I think you can achieve perfect narrative intelligence.
But I guess let me put it this way.
How do you judge it? How can you really say it's like, is this objectively any good? Dollars at the box office. Am I right?
Here's the thing. I don't think it's about what's good. I think it's about what we're attracted to as human beings.
That's what I was, and as far as inherently is, the context of it, it right, you can't break it.
Like the family making Toy Story, to go full out with the analogy, about the things that we're attracted to in love and in other people and those kinds of things. Like, say, you know, we have we invent sex robot. Right?
Already there. Way.
Right. Just well, one.
I know. I
know. You make one sex robot.
That's actually Seth's nickname.
Say we...
the line is through the door.
Say we perfected sex robot.
Futurama.
I'm getting that tattooed across my neck.
One robot sitting in a closet like in Ukraine.
Welcome. This is sex
Welcome,
robot.
Welcome, stranger. Would you like a good time?
But here's the question.
Voiced by me.
Who marries sex robot?
There will be people who marry sex robot.
Right, but
I just saw somebody marry an imaginary pony.
Sex robot cannot afford to be tied down. Sex robot needs to get on the road, baby. I feel that robot calling.
But do we not automatically assume that the person who marries sex robot
is problematic?
Is a problem issues. Because they are projecting a reality onto someone.
Baby, well, you're still beautiful.
We base everything that is good off the idea of reciprocation and coming together from differences.
But
and
that, comes
that is inherently what we will never be able to have with a robot, no matter how good we get with an iBot, is we still conceptually think of them as that term of perfection, as that term of something inhuman.
But that's when we start lying. That's straight up.
No,
if sex robot, you're like, oh, this is just a really vapid female who speaks like Stephen Hawking. Okay, I'm down for you. Like, then you suddenly again, so it's okay.
Sorry, sex robot's a dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, but
baby,
why?
You're still interesting. Come back. Come back.
Why is that a lie?
No. He's saying that's when we would, the creators of sex robot would say, no, this is not a sex robot. This is Mindy.
Stan.
In the game. Hey, baby. Okay,
so, well, I mean, then you get the whole idea of what is truth and is not.
Hold on. Let me flip this on its head.
This has to be called CISPAs sex and sex robots. Yeah.
Let me flip this one on its head.
Made it past one bullet point on the list.
Let me flip this one. What if we're in a world where there are robots, replicants, completely indistinguishable from human beings? The one human being who is accused of being a robot, and it's a composer.
Wait, is this a movie pitch?
No, I don't know what this is.
I thought you were talking about something.
Why do you keep trying to make movie pitches out of our podcast?
No, I'm just saying.
Because it's fun.
It's because it's the one thing that worked in the first podcast.
He's given the one thing that worked. Yeah, probably.
I don't know. Sex robot.
I don't think sex robot's much of a.
Well, would you be friends with sex robot, Matt? If sex robot was like, hey, Matt, let's hang out after these 1,020,433 babes.
What you're getting into is like, if you
let's go to Chipotle.
The question is whether or not you would then have a robot that could then live life experiences. And then inherently, though, the life experiences of a robot with the knowledge that other people have as a robot and they treat them differently, that experience will be something different than even a
sex
human.
Sex robot would be wondering why nobody loves her.
Now, would I be interested in seeing... Now,
him. I am as gender neutral as it gets, so him, her.
I got both orifices.
I'd be interested in seeing art done by a robot who has lived experiences. I don't think it will be... The same. It'd be like seeing what's the art of an alien race, like theoretically, right? It would probably be something completely indistinguishable to a degree.
How different is this, real quick?
You've seen Prometheus.
Now, Matt, how different is that sort of desire to see that art? And okay, hold on, this is going to be offensive.
A movie pitch.
No. How different is that from seeing like an art exhibition where they gave the cameras to a bunch of like impoverished kids from third world nations, and they're like, "Here, just take photos. Show us what your
experiences
are."
I think that'd be fascinating.
Really quickly, nobody's respecting the hand raising, and this is going to be a subpar podcast because of it. Secondly, it's interesting, Matt, that you always just assume the robot's going to have its own experiences. When we've, as we go on, this is something we covered in the podcast last week, is the idea that we are all recording more and more. Of our experiences online. So the idea that the robot needs to use its own
experiences. We're willingly sharing those, you're saying.
But I'm just saying a robot will have a vast amount of stuff to draw off beyond its own, like, GoPro audio input.
No, that's not the vast amount of stuff to draw on. is not the same as an individual experience.
Because let's back up.
Us ourselves are doing that also. We are hearing
exactly
other people's experiences.
Here's
what the robot doesn't have. This is going to sound weird, but it doesn't have like you waking up in the morning or like incredibly personal, bizarre moments that do shape your entire existence.
Right.
Like taking
Matt,
a shit by yourself.
You don't need to talk about what you're bad.
No. You finish your thoughts, then I'm going to bring it back.
I mean, I couldn't think of a personal experience. Here's where the weird, crazy
like Chinese scientists do it. They create a child and from birth only interacts with the world through Twitter and Facebook and then like create art. They just give them a guitar and just let's see what happens.
I'm going to bring it back around. Remember how you said IQ wasn't a barometer of success? It's the same exact thing because we talked about, I said IQ was the processor. Computers are basically the things with the highest IQ in the world. They can process at an extremely fast rate, far faster than we ever could. They can basically just do math really, 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 really fast. That's all they are.
They're like 1,000 Asians.
It's not a barometer of success.
To be fair, they actually are our processing power from purely like transistor number levels actually like way higher than a computer. It just knows one
brains.
Very it knows that, to be fair, it's just one very specific type of processing it does faster than the vast majority of us.
But
as opposed to if you ever there are certain idiot savants though or autistic people who actually can compute as fast as a computer can.
But to speak to the dynamic, let's go with the dynamic. And like having known a number of people with in that world of the ridiculously high IQ where they have no ability to function whatsoever, is that's what I feel like is representative of what happens when the computer tries to make art, is the people at the very highest end of IQ who
don't have the
CQs or EQs to back it up, to put it that simply. And there's a way that having that
there's
level
also
of
stuff
IQ
like how would you – because people don't draw from all experiences. Like they may have other people's experiences. This is weird things. Like how do you get the robot who was beat by his father, or get the robot? And now you're gonna say like somebody will give it to them, but that then the robot itself becomes a form of art from that person who decided and used their human filter and their own life experiences to give that robot that specific idea.
I think it's very easy when we talk about this to just assume the robot thinks like a human, or
but it thinks like the human that programmed
it. Anyways, computers think very differently than humans. Like when the most amazing applications of artificial intelligence are when we make robots do things that are completely inhuman. An example would be the flu thing. Looking at the GPS coordinates and divining which people were in proximity to a high degree of sick people. That's something that a human intuitively does not do. That is something that was something a computer's talents were best suited for. And so what we're talking about here when we talk about computational creativity is not can a computer emulate a human initially. It's how do we make a computer do the unexpected, which is very hard when that computer is only going to do things that are instructions written by another human. So really what it comes back to is to be fair, a human creativity problem. How can that human give instructions to a computer that will result in the unexpected? And once we get to that, then the next question becomes, how is that unexpected? How can we make that unexpected something that is then applicable to human emotion and a human reaction rather than just something that is intellectually
chaos.
Interesting. Use your hand. Use your hand, Freddie.
My answer would involve M-theory, believe it or not.
What's M-theory?
M-theory is basically the theory of how we can composite the 10 dimensions within the 5 known aspects of string theory.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Elaborate.
But I would love to know more.
Oh, Jesus. There's no way to talk about M-theory without making it seem anything but abstract and not useful. M-theory is basically the mathematical amalgamation that we have come up to explain why there are 5 forms of string theory and how they actually make sense and how we can have the universe make sense, or specifically the behavior of strings that we can identify to make sense.
I'm waiting for the aha.
This is literally four dudes just staring. like,
I thought we were going to talk about movies, bro.
Imagine like going to Petco and a bunch of puppies looking at a juggler. Like that's what we're all looking at.
I need more beer for this.
And I don't pretend to make myself an expert on M theory or anything to that degree, but having had somewhat of a background in mathematics, is that how to explain it? So basically, God, I'm getting in so much trouble.
If you could suggest some reading materials,
is there like a wiki or something?
Or at least like a nice book by like Richard Feynman or something.
Okay.
I think if you summarize it, Logan, you're wrong. Like, in quotes.
We'll make it sound like string theory is basically a very, very advanced form of mathematics that we use to describe the behavior of the universe. And there are five different kinds of it. The only one I'm like super familiar with is type 2A.
My favorite.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
No, 2A is sweet.
2A, from what I hear, it's the good one. So.
Yeah, you know, I tried 3B, but it didn't really drive.
But basically, M-theory is the thing that cohesively explains all of it. The way to make it sense is math is simply, like, the only thing that is true in mathematics is if you make a thing that always works, boom, you got a mathematical truth. Like, that's it. Like, oh, hey, the math says this always works. That's how we came up with the Higgs boson particle before we could ever identify it. Was like, oh, this thing has to be like this. Mm-hmm. We just can't isolate it. And then we finally did, which is amazing. But so math's the same sort of way. Is like, we were basically looking at all these problems with the different forms of string theory, and we were saying, like, oh, this is the way the math works with everything. And then we're like, oh, how does this explain the universe? How does this... it's basically an abstract theorem explaining how the math works with all the different kinds of string theory. That's what M-theory is. How do we get on this topic? Because I was saying it explained something.
I wrote down sunglasses, but I don't know.
That was our last topic.
I think you're saying
it was caps. It was related to.
It was
caps. I'm looking at Logan's notes. The last thing on the list is caps.
I just want to talk to Film Crit Hulk about caps before we.
We will do that before we do. Okay. holy shit! How to get there from Street?
It was. We could also talk about the Facebook cell phone.
From the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, only on the Facebook podcast. I'm just gonna,
like, I swear to God, there was some reason I said
you were talking about computational creativity and computers acting like humans or humans being creative.
And Logan was talking about how it's about making something that is unexpected, and then from that point, how do you go from unexpected to?
If you want, we could probably we are recording everything, so we could just play it back for you.
I was gonna say the shortest version of how we get there is we basically have to program our highest end fractals and a lot of things that we're doing in mathematics at this point to exploring the unexpected. And that's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I'm not even going to get into it because obviously it was a non-starter.
We'll throw Wikipedia.
If I was interested, what should I Google?
Google M theory and just read the Wikipedia
like
page
the letter
to
M?
Start. Yeah,
like the
M theory. It's M-theory. Theory in like
Judi Dench and James Bond.
Yeah, and I mean basically the place where it ultimately has some kind
Freddie
of value.
Freddie really liked that joke.
Yeah, that was a good joke.
God, that would land it on Freddie.
Boom goes.
Sorry, just didn't expect James Bond and Judi Dench to so many
all
other
right,
ways.
Basically, the place where it will ultimately have any kind of value is understanding the dimension. So do you know what it is? Is like there's a great internet video called. I think it's like understanding in the 10th dimension or imagining.
It's like the animated
two chicks, one cup.
Yeah,
that's it, right?
Don't Google
long
that.
Long story. I knew the guy who started that.
Oh god,
that
oh.
is the longest
anyway. Story you'll tell of it.
He's in jail, so it doesn't matter.
Freddie, were you there when we watched Swap.avi?
I was. I was in fact the instigator of Swap Night.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Swap.avi?
No.
Logan has described it to me in great detail.
Hulk, are you aware of the greatest cinematic masterpiece of all time?
Oh, don't say that.
Whoa,
wait, okay.
Really quickly,
kids are going to watch this.
I'm going to get
semi-serious for a moment. As a kid, you'll think it's cool to go watch, like, Serbian dude chop off somebody's head. Wait, no. You'll watch the Serbian dude get his head chopped off. You'll do this stuff because you'll think it's curious. I'll tell you something, though. Those images
will affect you for the rest of your life.
Never,
and you will never forget
that.
Them. And guarantee you, unless it's important for you to see it, it is not worth it. Just a disclaimer.
As someone who has worked as a paramedic, don't do it.
Yes. So
and well,
continue
real
on.
Quick, just, but don't forget, we are in a post Two Girl, One Cup world.
All the more reason to say, here, you want to be cool, kids? You watch that shit? You're an idiot. Boom. Go.
Boom. Here's the difference is that Two Girls, One Cup, for all its ridiculous inhumanity, is still juvenile. It's fecal. It's poo-poo. It's, you know
it's
what I'm saying?
Third grade humor, pretty much.
Right. Yeah. Completely personified to the extreme.
Yeah.
Whereas something that is life-altering, I mean, what you just described, has a very different human effect on our mortality.
You can't undo seeing it.
Right. And it's about the affectation of how you view the world. Whereas
you know, it's like,
Two Girls, One Cup gets back to how we saw the world as a toddler.
Well, anyway, so Logan and I saw... Logan and I watched it, and our friend decided... Well, Logan, you were drinking milk? Or David was drinking milk during...
Before I ever used to drink booze, so I was drinking milk.
Anyway.
Maybe you should... I mean,
it's a Two Girls, One Cup type of, like, shock video. Really
here's the thing that I discovered when I watched Soft on
Okay.
I didn't know what
Hulk
it felt
is chugging
like.
His beer right
just
now.
Just M3 to this. Just
I just didn't realize that I could feel my soul dying until I saw Swap Die. Like, I literally felt like in my chest a little bit of it leaving.
Do you still feel that missing piece of Logan?
It might just be my cholesterol.
So, to round it back to what we're talking about, I feel like that's actually one of the dangers of the internet and the information age is there's experiences you can't not filter. And I feel like that does alter you. Like, I feel like there's a difference between those who grew up on a farm, have very specific relationships, whereas now I can see swamp.avi or something, and you can't undo that, and what you perceive will always be different because of it.
I like between this and you also being like, you know, that little that brony thing is just, it's just fucked up. It's just wrong.
It is.
Basically Matt being this alarmist anti-internet person.
No, because it's not, because I think the internet is also the best thing. Or maybe the best thing to ever happen to humanity, but there's...
I'd argue bread.
Or life.
Okay.
Not existence.
Maybe not humanity. Existence. I mean modern times. It's an incredibly important and good thing.
Okay, can we talk about bronies for a second?
yes, you wrote a whole thing on it.
I didn't even write a whole thing. I wrote it was basically a tangential thing, basically, to give a little background. I wrote a column about how all these people were hating on the show New Girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the show as like an objective written piece of like entertainment is actually pretty good.
It's actually maybe just as I've been watching now. It's become maybe the best sitcom on TV
right
now.
It's really well written.
Parks and Rec's gone down.
Better than Two Guys, A Girl, and a Pizza Place.
That's not on the
TV. That's not
right
on television.
I don't watch television. I don't know television.
Sorry. Okay. But I mean, just like, and basically there was all these people having a knee-jerk reaction because of Zooey Deschanel or whatever kind of bias they did. And I was just like, hey, just so you know, this is a thing that is actually pretty good. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to like it. It's fine. But your knee-jerk reaction to this thing is deeply problematic, which is, yes.
Well, no, I see a lot of that, which is the inability of people online to realize that there are a multitude of different tastes and a multitude of different experiences that people have.
And this is, it sounds stupid, but this is kind of my entire whole mission statement with what I do. It is basically the whole expectation when you see a thing that's called Film Crit Hulk, you think, oh, he's going to get angry and smash movie reviews. And what I do is I do the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. I literally try to be the most careful, the most considerate, the most positive, the most optimistic kind of thing so that it defies expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people will constantly assume the thing, and that's fine. Like I totally get that's a huge part of it. But like
the only thing Hulk smashing is barriers in your mind.
Right, exactly. But it's like it's this weird device to get at people to disarm themselves. It's to be like, oh, I'm expecting this. Somebody writing in a Hulk character can't be a personal, very emotional thing. And I try to write in a very, very personal, emotional way.
I don't know if it's more common or you just like the problem with the internet is that you assume everything's more common because you can see everything.
Right,
so, but there's something I find in like kind of younger fans, and I feel it is a side effect of information age and everything, is people think more in terms of that story or that character is not what I would do. and less why was that decision made or why did that character do that. And the moment that discussion starts, you essentially – there's no reason to watch art or read art outside of just pure – consumption and just wasting your time because
you're right, Matt. No consumption of art, period. No art.
No, no. What I'm saying is, you're not getting anything out of it. If all you're doing is watching to see if it's going to confirm what you think,
are you sure you don't want to place art with maybe like narrative storytelling or film? Just art, just across
like
the
paintings.
Board, like paintings,
paintings, poetry,
haikus.
Paintings
have constantly been about breaking barriers. That is the one thing you can do in painting to advance the art.
I guess I meant specifically the moment you move from what they would. You're talking about choices, and choices only apply to specific forms of art. So I was just.
I'm going to get back to whatever the hell I was talking about. We were talking about bronies. Right, right. Okay. that was even further than I thought. So that's perfect. Yeah. So it's all about fine. So then I had this whole tangent where I talked about bronies and was saying like this is the extreme form of culture, and I didn't mean to, but I guess it was like the most judgmental I have ever come across in kind of a thing.
Oh man,
where I was basically just like forgive Hulk for drawing the line at people. Fucking stuffed horse pussies.
completely accept.
Please forgive.
Completely accept.
But, I actually got, because my whole thing is being very centered and being very reasonable and listening to people.
So you
I
got
actually,
some plushies?
No, I got unquantifiable amount of mail of people saying, like, you threw us under the bus. You really, this is not your thing. Like very, very angry. And it got me to
Did you get any email from the My Little Pony characters themselves, maybe, even saying?
No, but people who were in very serious relationships with them. and so, like I said, is this basically they represent this extreme of internet culture and sort of this thing that is kind of troubling to any outsider whatsoever. Like a lot of my gay friends were just like, I don't even fucking know.
Just forget it.
But, I mean, their whole thing is like, we're not hurting anybody. What do you care? Blah, blah, blah. They imbue the same rhetoric that I believe really strongly with like the gay community and the transsexual community and things I'm really, really, really behind. And so it got me to think a lot about that. And I'm still thinking about writing about it again, oddly enough. But...
because you just love getting that mail.
But, oh God! I have right now. I worked it down from 1,000 unreplied emails. I'm like at like 600 now.
I didn't realize are a lot of bronies like sexually involved with these ponies?
No, it's a subset.
It's a subset.
But it's a pronounced element.
Yeah,
it is. I try to be very conscious of it. I try to be sensitive to everybody. And like my whole thing is I'm trying to be in a constant state of learning with all of it. Mm-hmm. But the thing is what I didn't get across was the way I find brony culture interesting as a weird subsect of sexuality is the same way I find any sexuality interesting. Like they're all kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like the fact that like the majority of our American culture is into infantilization is weird to me. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's what I didn't get across was the universal way.
Just these universally weird. Here's how you get back on their side. The next article starts with a picture of a plushie, and you say, "So, readers."
Sorry, but that was going on a whole thing. But it's just it's a weird thing when you're on the internet and suddenly you are engaged by every single subsect of any community.
Oh, and it's all on equal footing too.
Right,
that's the thing. It's like it's because by virtue of they've found each other, it is therefore okay and therefore socially acceptable, and they are not necessarily mainstream, but it's an acceptable side stream. Right.
And
of
it's not
things.
That I don't know they're wrong; it's that I think they have to be aware of how outside the mainstream they might be.
I guess that's where the point is that at a certain point you can self-awareness just be like you can be into some weird things like Matt and I we're really into baths.
Well, I was wondering where you can go with that.
Taking baths not together in our own bathtubs.
Be good.
But we're aware that that's not usually the male form.
That's not comparable
of
bronies. Let's be honest.
Let's be realistic.
Just try to bring ourselves into it, Matt. Jeez.
The first person to Photoshop Matt and Freddie in the same room together.
Matt, look, you cannot.
Damn it.
Can I take a moment and say you can't do these contests anymore? These are not real contests.
Bonus points if Logan's in there. And bonus points if you can bring quotes from the slash fiction that was made about us in the original run of the podcast. There you go, Logan. Now you're in there.
Triple bonus points if you make me the ivory soap that Matt is scrubbing Freddy down with.
No! I agree with that.
I will give anybody $200 if it gets to be the number one Google image. I'm not getting
quintuple bonus points if it appears as if it were painted by a sex robot.
I think everybody's got their work cut out for them. I saw something on Twitter today about a blob. What the fuck was the blob about? Was this from this podcast?
The blob?
Whatever. Cut that out. Alex, how are we doing on time?
Well, I think it's like an hour and 40 minutes.
Right, 2 hours.
We're not going to talk about caps?
Caps.
Okay, let's talk about caps and wrap it up here.
Okay, sorry.
So now that since we're on the subject of your actual blog, can we just talk about why you're all in caps all the time?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for people who aren't familiar, Film Crit Hulk here writes in all caps, which I've heard studies say it slows down your reading comprehension, but I never really bought that.
Okay.
Because I read pretty fast.
But perhaps that's the point.
Right. It does. But that's not the main reason. There's a lot of reasons for it. I actually have an interview with The Verge where I talk about it very in depth. So you can maybe...
We'll link to it.
Right. Well, I mean, but
give us the clip notes.
But what it is my whole thing is I'm trying to engage in a very big discussion. And, like, I have giant amounts of comments. I try to respond to every single comment that people write.
It's impossible.
No, but I do. Like I've had comment threads go thousands and thousands long. And I read every single one, and I try to respond to every single one. And I really, really do try because I think it's a big part of it. I used to be a teacher a long time ago. Like, it's where my entire philosophy comes from is that, you know, I write an article and that's the start of it. And I have an opinion, I'm like, and it goes from there. And so many times after I have these big discussions with all these great fans and all these great writers, and then I'm like, oh, how, now I'm ready to write the article after I've gone.
But you needed that out there to even get to that point.
Exactly, sure. Exactly. And, you know, I'm trying to be in this constant state of learning. So the thing about the caps that I like is in taking on this Hulk persona. And by the way, I actually turn into the Incredible Hulk when I write these articles, and nobody can prove otherwise. So
that's probably part of the reason is the keyboard.
Right. Yeah, but to make it very simple, is just when you can abandon your very autocratic process of what writing should be like or what it is, you are instantly in a place where you are more accepting of engaging in dialogue. And the people who are like, fucking all caps, fuck it, I don't want to read this. Like, you are instantly taken out of a very productive conversation.
It's and a filter process.
I mean, that makes it sound like very cruel or sort of withholding.
But it's like what Tarkovsky did with Solaris at the beginning, where it's like, it's 20 minutes of just Japanese footage.
And if you can't get into
you can't get past that, you're not going to like this movie anyway, dude. Get out of here.
I think it's really weird that I also thought of that. I think that's maybe the second or third time tonight that this has happened.
I've lived with you way too long.
But it's and it's not just like the aesthetic thing. It's, you know, like I tried to be like very sweet and very understanding. And like I say, everybody comes in expecting the Hulk to yell and smash things and be angry. And the idea is that, you know, it's a very understanding thing. And so much about it is subverting expectation. Mm-hmm. And when you can get into that place, when you subvert expectation, you can get to a place where you have mutual respect and you can communicate and you can just let down your guard. That's my big thing, is nobody on the internet is just letting down their guard and just
it's always a point you have to make and you always have to win. Mm-hmm.
There's so many people who at first, you know, because I've grown so much, it's kind of ridiculous. But there's so many people at first are like, ah, I don't care. It's just some stupid gimmick. And then, like, slowly over time, they realize it's actually a device. Mm-hmm.
By the way, next year's April Fool's. You need to write in all lowercase, and it's just the most scathing, like, generic, like, this sucks review.
I can't talk about it, but I might be doing some lowercase writing soon.
Really quickly, has anybody done a, like, Python script or an adaptation site or something where I can just read your stuff in normal, like, syntax?
ConvertCase.net. You can just grab it all.
Really? That's like the way to go?
Yeah, just grab it all, do it. My book is going to be in both.
Oh.
I feel like if I'm making people pay for it, it's got to be in both.
Wait, you can choose the regular director's cut edition?
It's going to be Banner version and Hulk version.
Well, because I get the idea. There's something interesting about the idea of it being an equalizer. That might be an oversimplification of what you're talking about, but it's a barrier to entry. I guess the Solaris analogy is maybe the most appropriate.
And to say, it's like at this point, like, you know, I got thousands and thousands and thousands of trust me, like the caps thing works. I'm not making this up. It works.
to achieve what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
What you're going for.
Yeah.
Well, achieve what you're trying to do being the vetting process, or I guess read this Verge article and
it's the affectation that it has on the reader subconsciously to a lot of them, and like I say, a lot of people resist at first, but a lot of people come around, and even people still to this day don't quite understand it, and that's fine. I got in trouble with a few
with the
other
grammar police.
I got in trouble with a few other critics who I actually really respect the other day. Because with what happened with the Boston Marathon, I'm originally from Boston. I ended up writing an article about it and just what it means and what Patriots Day is. And it was something that, like, I instantly just stopped doing all work just to write about it because it was very important to me. And I thought people should understand this. And it was very heartfelt and it was about the process. And, you know, there are four or five other critics who I don't know. I don't think they've ever really read me. They're just aware of me. And they had a really big moral problem with the idea that somebody was pretending to be the Hulk and writing about a tragedy where people died.
So what percentage of your writing would you say do you try to write in the Hulk voice versus I'm just going to put this in caps and it's the name
it's
Hulk.
It's my voice.
It's all
truth. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And
that's interesting.
That makes people a lot of angry.
It's not like the Hulk. According to the canon, you should be talking.
You clearly haven't been reading Hulk comics for over 30 years, because I have, and I can tell you there's been many different iterations of the Hulk.
It's interesting what you're saying, that people would, through a device, you know, like...
Yeah.
Because, like, isn't that sort of the same impulse? They'd be like, I can't believe you're bothering... I can't believe that you're... You're writing a Twitter post about this. How 140 characters? Like how this form? It's like
the example I would use is Colbert didn't break character to talk
right,
about
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
It has a purpose. There's a reason I'm doing it.
Interesting.
And it's because I actually turn into the Hulk.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it's fitting that we had a Hulk size podcast for
Hulk size podcast for Film Crit Hulk.
I can talk a while.
highly recommend the writings. Google it. We'll link to them. Really, really good. If you're a filmmaker starting out and you want to, one, sound like not an idiot when you're debating things online. Again, the actors one was cool
because nobody like really understands or talks about that. I think that's the cool thing about that. The place I think from an ethos standpoint to start is I did my very first post I ever wrote for Badass was called Never Hate a Movie.
Right.
And it's just sort of about the ethics of how we approach movies and that kind of thing. So.
All right. So
do you know when the revised Screenwriting 101 will come out?
Soon. Meredith, my wonderful editor, is deep into it right now.
I want to ask you, until that comes out, what is a screenwriting book that you would actually recommend?
Screenwriting. I kind of wrote it because I'm not happy with any of them.
Ah.
nobody writes them like they used to, so it might as well be me.
Film theory book,
I would say, is Sculpting in Time by Andrei Tarkovsky. It's the best one that gets at the essence of what film kind of is. However, I would say my favorite book about film period is by Walter Murch. It's called In the Blink of an Eye.
Oh, fantastic.
Good book. Oh, God. It's
like
just
phrase Bible.
Absolute requirement. If you want to be an editor, you must.
Not even editor, cinematographer,
everything.
It's just understanding how film works as a medium the best.
Yeah, it's top of my list as well. It's a good book. Yeah, so we've had a... Oh, Logan, I think you're going to get something.
Logan wants to end this. Go, end it, Logan.
If you have one piece of advice for everyone on Earth, what would it be?
Everyone on... You know, I'm going
to... It's going to go over every piezo and speaker and every single form of audio output on Earth.
Deaf people will get a text message.
I'm gonna do a thing where I just go and I'd say about two things. If you're interested in film and screenwriting and all those things, my main piece of advice is if you're just starting out, if you're younger, understand that what you're working on now is part of a process. Everybody, when they're 18 years old, likes to think, oh, this is going to get made. I have to make it perfect. And I've watched young kids spend 5 years on a single script. Just work. Start a new thing.
Start
get better. Keep going. Keep going. Keep repeating.
That's like our philosophy.
Right. I always say like when you paint, when you start painting, you got to do a lot of spheres and fruit before you start painting. Sometimes doesn't need to be the best picture of an apple, but you got to paint that apple, dude.
But it can also just be an anime character. it does not have to be a sphere or fruit.
So, and your advice for everyone in the world at once?
Every bit of kindness I've ever put out into the world has been repaid.
Mm. Dez, what is your advice to everybody on
that?
Matt, how about yours? You have 30 seconds to broadcast to Earth.
Stay alive.
Stay alive. The anthem of
whatever
the Bee Gees.
Whatever you do.
Matt Arnold, anthem of
alive.
The Bee Gees.
This is God's
stay
panic.
Alive.
The pantheon of paranoia, Matt Arnold.
Look behind
just
you.
Survive.
They're after you.
I'll do the one that I actually tweeted about after the events in Boston.
That was a really lame one. Are you really going to
do
that?
Wow.
Jeez.
All right, Logan.
What was the lame one?
It was don't judge other people. How about that, Logan?
No, it was like
Logan
like,
could learn from.
It was very basic. It was basically stay calm and resist the urge to speculate. Those are two pretty good advice for everyone.
Stay calm.
No, stay calm, resist the urge to speculate. I think
that's not going to help me when I'm really fucked up.
Will staying alive, the anthem of the Bee Gees, help you, Des?
Yeah, all right, but let's look at we got in this with Logan, who's Mr. Judgmental here.
We don't have to end it with me. Des didn't.
Judge not, lest ye be judged. How about that, Logan?
That's a good one.
Who wants to go to a bar right now?
Oh, I
want to at least eat a hot dog.
Logan, what's your advice to everybody in the world?
Bottoms up.
Oh, man. That's pretty serious. I think if they were like, Logan, produce your 30-second WAV file and we will broadcast it to everybody.
Is this happening right now? Okay, all right.
Is that what it would be?
No, go.
You changed it, but sure, why not? That's your new question.
I will now choose to answer.
Right now, you are at the end of Cloud Atlas and you have to give the radio address for future eons.
Exactly.
I would try.
I like that movie.
I like the idea of me trying to do an impression of a sine wave with my voice.
Like,
but like with an LFO on the oscillator. So it's like, oh.
This coming from the man who called your Twitter lame, by the way, your tweet. Right.
Or I'd just be like, hey, dudes, party hard.
Party on.
I accept party hard.
Party hard. But with like this insane reverb, so the hard goes on for minutes. So it's like party hard.
It just sounds like you're in a bathroom inside the Coliseum, inside another bathroom. Anyway, on that rousing note.
But it'd be mixed with a lion's roar.
Real quick, let's actually, Alex, let's just end it on that. Go ahead, Logan, and just tell us. This, ladies and gentlemen, the one piece of advice Logan is going to give to everybody in the world.
Party hard. Good luck reverbing that, Alex.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Take care, everybody. Thank you, Film Crit Hulk.
Thanks, Hulk.
Smash.
Oh, yeah, we should probably say thank you.